My podcasts often deal with distressing situations which are not suitable for children, and some adults for that matter. Some of what I discuss may trigger uncomfortable emotions. If that does occur, please reach out to Lifeline, Beyond Blue, or any other support service or person you feel comfortable with. Hello, I'm Narelle Fraser. I was a cop with Victoria Police for 27 years, 15 of those as a detective, having dealt with all types of crime from a stolen bicycle to a stolen life. I witnessed the effect crime has on all those involved and became one of those victims myself in 2012 when I was diagnosed with PTSD. However, out of adversity comes other opportunities like this, my own podcast. I still pinch myself, but thanks for listening and coming with me as we explore the human side and impact of crime.
Once there was this lady who was missing. So I was Googling this lady heaps and I sort of was getting a bit of an instinct that something wasn't right here. And then I went to where she was living with these three other people and knocked at the door and said, "Where's your housemate? Do you miss her?" And they ended up being charged with her murder.
Sarah Lawrence has been a regular on the regional media scene since 2011. She grew up in Melbourne, then worked in newspapers and media in Geelong and Torquay while juggling a journalism degree at La Trobe Uni. Moving to Bendigo, she never imagined that she'd enjoy regional life so much, working at Prime 7 and Wynn News with a short stint in Wagga Wagga. In 2017, Sarah moved to Nine News, where she helped set up the Central Victorian Bureau as senior reporter. A senior being all of, well, I thought she was 25, but she's just told me she's 32. She looks like she's about 20, but that's me. But again, Sarah, I'll show her senior, my friend. I've got an ID card to prove, and a government ID card to prove it. Sarah believes that there's huge opportunities in regional media. Journalists are often covering courts, crime, and politics. However, with regional media comes quiet days due to smaller populations, which leave journalists hungry for strong stories with good vision. Journalism, like policing, is very different in the country, as are many careers. Today, we're going to go behind the scenes of reporting crime, the impact that some of the stories have had on Sarah, how she finds a story, how she builds the story, and what does it have to get onto the news. How does a TV reporter manage those stories that break your heart? How do they keep a straight face sometimes recanting an amusing story? Well, we're about to find out. So welcome, Sarah Lawrence.
Hi, Narelle.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for joining us. So how does it feel to be the person being interviewed rather than you being the interviewer? Have I got you all nervous? Because that's my plan.
Yep. Yeah. Sweaty palms. Yep.
Okay. Well, here we go. So can you give us a snapshot of how a story gets onto the nightly news? Like, where does the story start? How do you get it? All that sort of stuff.
Yep. It starts with, well, depending on the story, it starts with a lot of curiosity. So you might have something come up on email, there might be something on social media, you might see something in another publication, and then it sort of goes from there. And even though our day technically starts at 8:30, most of my colleagues and I were up at 7 o'clock checking our phones, going through stuff. Even at nighttime, it gets a little bit addictive. You might be looking through, seeing what's happening. And then from there, get into the office or sometimes even from home, depending on how hungry you are for the story, you'll start making calls, organising interviews, and then coordinating with your camera operator, heading out and doing all the interviews, coming back, writing, then getting your script subbed and then by a sub-editor who might be in Melbourne, and then after that, getting it edited and then sent off and on the news.
Oh, so easy. nothing to it. You just said then that you might wake up at 7 o'clock and you start reading and looking for interesting stories. What would be a story that you would think, ah, there's a story in that. I'll give them a ring. What sort of things is it that you're looking at?
Oh, the typical, you know, the, well, when it comes to crime, anything like that, anything that's going to get a big community reaction that a lot of people have a reaction to, anything that sort of excites people or has a lot of divisive opinions, mm-hmm. with TV especially, it has to be visually good. So anything that's got good pictures that we can get to in the day, because we've got such tight deadlines, we want to make sure ideally that everything can be filmed and done by 2 o'clock. So it's a lot of chasing.
And so how long would a normal TV news story take to compile?
On an average day, it can take anywhere from 2 hours to 4 hours to 5 hours, depending on how far you've got to travel. Normally when you get to a story, the average time you would spend there, I always estimate an hour. Sometimes it can be a little bit longer, sometimes it can be a little bit less, and then going back to write, it depending on the story and how much it flows and you've connected with it, it might take anywhere from 10 minutes to an hour to write. And then to edit is the same deal. It depends on the editor. Some of them are really fast. Some of them might want to put more work into it, so it can be anywhere from 10 minutes to an hour as well. So sort of overall, it's anywhere from sort of an hour to 3 hours.
And I suppose also in the country, you've got the travelling, haven't you? Like in Melbourne Metropolitan, for instance, you might be, I don't know, 20 minutes, it can be 10 minutes from a story to go and interview somebody, but the country, you can be driving for hours, can't you?
Yeah, yep. You get to know your camera operators really well and talk a lot of crap, and they become like your fifth best friend that knows everything about your life.
Yeah, that sounds like a little bit like on the div van as a cop. You know, you can spend a lot of time in the car with somebody just, you know, going from jobs or discussing the jobs or whatever, and I get that. You do start to divulge some stuff. You think, my God, you know, this guy or this woman next to me is hearing my life story. I get that. Yeah, that's funny. So can you tell us what it's like to report on a serious crime?
It can be quite exciting. It's interesting. It can be a thrill. It can be lots of emotions because you feel that sort of responsibility to be able to portray their story in a sensitive way and to not upset family members or the people involved. So there's that pressure. I guess the difference, I often think of this with policing and even lawyering, that we're not really responsible in many ways for what's happening. Well, we're not responsible at all for what's happening with the people. So there's that disconnection, which I think can make things a little bit easier.
Hmm. You said that's funny you say that about that crime is exciting. And isn't it weird? It is exciting. And I still find when I listen to crime, it is exciting. You want to know, why would somebody do that? How did it happen? And you've always been interested in crime, haven't you?
Yeah. And even now, though, Narelle, I turned up to a missing person one a few weeks ago and I said, well, mate, Narelle Fraser says parachute theory. Keep an open mind. So, yeah, you've taught me a lot.
Oh, that's funny. And just to help the listeners there, the parachute theory at detective training school, they teach you that your mind is like a parachute and it only works if it's open. And it's a very, very salient point, isn't it, with anything to keep your mind open. And that's funny that you take that away from stuff that I've said. Oh, the old parachute theory, all coming back. Is there a particular type of crime that you try to avoid covering, and if so, why?
Yeah, anything to do with children I personally don't like, because it can, you've got to be careful what you say in terms of the legalities around a child, and also it's very divisive. The all the emotions that come with children can, you know, and I remember you saying when you were reporting on the Harley Hicks one, you're like, well, I don't have children, I'll take this one on board because it upsets the parents and that type of thing. And I also don't have children, and I think, oh, maybe, you know, maybe I'm not understanding this enough. Maybe I'm not connecting. I hope I don't offend anyone. It just carries more of that burden. And animal cruelty I don't like.
No, you know, it's funny. I'm not an animal person at all, but there's something about cruelty to animals that I can't deal with. And I think a lot of that goes back to my experiences with sex crimes. When somebody is a serious sex offender, you often find that they have prior convictions for cruelty to animals and are starting fires, a pyromaniac. And I don't know if that's where that comes from, that cruelty to animals with me, but I don't understand how I can be so affected by cruelty to animals when I don't particularly like animals. But you do, because you've obviously got a dog, because you've got a leave pass tonight to speak to me because your husband is at home looking after the dog. The only reason you could come and talk to me. So is that why is it animals that affect you so much? Do you know?
No, I guess it's that thing of like similar to children. They don't have control over the situation. It's and people's reactions. I find when I did one on a bag of kittens that were found dead, and we turned up to a work site and we're next to where the kittens were found dead in the bag, and the people were so selfish about it and they didn't care. And I thought, it just brings out the worst in some people as well, their reactions, which can make you quite uncomfortable.
When you just said then, or when I asked you about what type of crime do you try and avoid, and I understand about children because most people are the same, but how do you get out of, like, if you're Johnny on the spot, if you're the only one, do you get a choice as to whether, look, I can't do this, or like, how does that work?
It all comes down to timing and logistics. So as to who's closest, who's nearby, who might be starting later or earlier, if your colleague that you're working with at the time might really like court or might really like a particular type of crime, you might call them and negotiate and say, would you like to do this instead? So a lot of that comes into play.
But I don't imagine you'd get many people putting their hand up to say, oh, look, I'll do that, the one with the story with the child, like cruelty or something like that. Like, can you avoid it or not?
In some ways, yeah. If you had a legitimate reason and you said, I just hate doing this, or, I know one of my camera operators as little children, he really doesn't like that kind of stuff. So we might say, well, maybe, you know, the other one should do it because they might be more comfortable with, or might be not as caring today, and that type of thing.
What's the most difficult story you've ever covered?
Probably last year. There was a lady called Kate Stone who was found guilty after quite a long trial of murdering her husband, and she poured petrol over him and set him on fire, which was what was divulged in court. And she was 41 years old. She was sentenced to 34 years in prison with 28 non-parole. But what got me doing that story was that she had 5 children and 4 daughters who, I think at the time, 3 were teenagers and 1 was 21, and they would turn up to court every day with their grandma. And it was a very hard to cover because I felt that there wasn't a lot of thought or consideration given to her daughters, and I felt so sorry for them because in a way they've lost both of their parents. Their mum's in jail, their father's dead, they didn't come from a great area, so it was just really sad. And also the female factor of trying to get around the mindset of how on earth did this happen. I find female crime a lot more something that I'll think about a lot more and feel a lot more affected by than any others that I cover. Did you find that when you were policing?
It's funny you say that. You know, I've done a podcast recently with a friend who was the informant in a matter where, you might know of it, working in Bendigo. The lady's name was Lorraine White, and she poisoned her husband very slowly over a number of years. They lived in Bendigo, and she had three kids. And are you aware of that one? His name was Leonard Moss.
I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah. His name was Leonard Moss. And anyway, she was the informant, and the wife got found guilty, but they didn't find out for 15 years that she had murdered him, very slowly. But, yeah, there's not a lot of women that offend a murder, I mean, generally, you'd have to say, I don't know, 95% at least of offenders with murder are men. But that's really unusual to have a woman douse somebody with petrol and, did you say, set them alight?
Mm.
Yeah, that's really unusual because, women generally, I'm generalising here, but it's so violent. Like I've, experienced a woman alight, she'd set herself alight, but it's just so violent and so traumatic. That is very, very unusual.
Yeah.
And it certainly does. It just goes against the grain. Like, women are generally not particularly violent. They might be sneaky, they might be all these different things, but violent isn't one of them.
Mm. Yeah, there was a lot of questions as well that if I ever met her, I'd have so many questions for her that it's things that I thought didn't come out in court. It's interesting, just very complex.
And they generally are. What was the last story that you covered where you took it home and you couldn't forget about it? I imagine you have a few of them, but I'm the last one that you can remember.
There was one last year with Jason Lowndes, who was killed when he was riding along a road in Bendigo, and he was a very, very promising cyclist. He was riding and living internationally, but come home to see his parents, and he got hit by a car, and then the girl went to court, and in the end, she wasn't jailed for what she did, but it was so sad because his parents were there, and I'd actually been at the scene originally, and then I'd covered the campaign with his parents to get more awareness of cycling, and then I was in court with them, and it was just, they were really nice people, and they spoke so humbly, and they were so nice, so they were really heartbroken. It plays on your mind a lot, I think. I find, having seen a lot of car crashes, they're the ones that can, when I drive around, I think, oh no, that happened there.
Yeah.
It plays in my mind a lot. Yeah. Did you have that happen to you when you were policing?
Yeah, I did. In fact, my husband has always thought about, he'd love to live in North Melbourne. And when I was at Carlton as a Connie, Carlton to me, we did a lot of jobs in North Melbourne where they were, and this is, please, this is nothing against the people in North Melbourne, but I just happened to go to a lot of people that died in their flats alone in North Melbourne. I went to a lot of drug-related investigations and incidents in North Melbourne. And so when he said years and years ago now about, I wouldn't mind living in North Melbourne, it was like, oh, my God, I couldn't live there, because every corner I went to, every street I went down, I'd think, yep, I went to that place and there was a deceased old man in that house, and we did a drug raid there. So, no, I get that. Yeah, very much so. What about, have you covered some pretty bizarre crime stories?
Yeah, there's been a few.
Yeah.
I've got two really funny examples. there was one that stayed with me, and this is, it's quite lighthearted, but it just bamboozled me. I went to a pub where they'd done a ram raid and taken the entire ATM machine with thousands of dollars inside. I was watching the CCTV. This criminal had a whole bar of alcohol to choose from, takes the cookie jar, and to this day I'm thinking, what on earth were you doing? You had like an entire pub of food and drinks and alcohol, and you took the cookie jar, and it was like a big round one, and you had to carry it with both his arms tugged around. That was quite bizarre. And there was another similar one I did it at a taxi service where they had a bad break-in, and they took money, and they took the most disgusting biscuits in the staff room that were probably, you know, 5 or 6 years old, black and gold. That one, I always think that's bizarre. I think, I know they're probably on all types of things, but I always just think, oh, really? That's disgusting.
Now, you know, the first thing I would think about if there was a cookie jar taken anywhere would be their kids. Isn't that funny? Yeah, because generally an adult that's, you know, got the choice of, you know, beautiful scotches and, oh, I don't know, anything you want, and they take a cookie jar, that's the first thing I would think of, that it's probably kids. That's funny. And talking about bizarre and funny sort of situations, have you ever been midstream into a story where you can't continue it for whatever reason, whether you're overcome with emotion or whether you've got the giggles, or have you ever had that situation happen?
Oh, fortunately, I haven't had anything like that bad, but there are a few circumstances where, you know, yesterday I was standing on a ledge and it was really windy, and we had the light next to us, and the light kept falling down from the wind. So every take we were doing at the start of each take is me yelling at the camera operator, quick, hurry up. And you get the giggles and you can't stop. But nothing overly dramatic, fortunately. Oh, there was one time I remember when we were literally on deadline, filling out, you know, writing the story, putting it all together, and this was at court, and we'd had photos given to us of the victim, and my poor camera operator was in the back. I could hear him in the back doing editing, and because you edit from court because it was so close to deadline, and I could hear him like sniffling and wiping away tears because he was so upset by these photos that sort of brought it all home. And but the exciting thing about that was then I think we got it in within a few minutes to 6 o'clock, and we were sitting in the car with the app watching it within minutes. So that was a real thrill.
Well, I just the questions I'm asking you, you know, it reminds me when you're midstream something and you can't continue. This is probably a little bit rude, but it is an adult show. But I will never forget a time that my colleague and I had an interview somewhere where we were looking for a Chinese. I can't remember whether it was a man or a woman. But anyway, we got to the door, and the person that we were looking for was a person called Fook Me. And I'll never forget getting to the door and saying, oh, because the person came, and it was a Chinese person, and I remember saying, Fook Me. And the guy that I was with, we just completely lost it. And I actually, it was so unprofessional, but I actually had to go back to the div. I could not concentrate. I just laughed and laughed, and it was so embarrassing. I just couldn't stop, because I remember going into the house and we continued talking about Fook Me, and oh no, I just lost it. But anyway, most unprofessional. So so in the situations, and I'm probably talking more here about emotions where you're upset about something that you're reporting, how do you keep your emotions in control reporting it in front of the camera?
I think you're under so much time pressure, and it's kind of like being an artist in a way, like you're writing the story and you bringing it all together that you've kind of been work mode. So I've never had any trouble there. But if I'm talking to someone and it's a really emotional story and they're crying, sometimes you'll start to cry with them, which is always a bit awkward because then makeup's going and all that type of thing. But I guess we're human, aren't we? So,
and would that would you want that to be cut out, or would you think, well, it shows that emotive human side of me? Like, how would you feel about that being shown?
If I was crying, well, fortunately, it's not, because I'm on the other side. I'm with the camera operator, so it's more like when I go back through the interview, I'll cut the grab of them where they're crying. And I've just got to remain quiet, though. It's like the eyes are just welling up, because otherwise my audio would be over their audio. So,
You know, journalists get a fair whack sometimes when they appear to be almost harassing somebody for a story. What's your response to that?
It's tricky because I do say to people, well, you're a consumer. You watch the news. Stop watching then if you really feel that strongly about it. It can be, we did this really good session once at work. It was with a psychologist, and it was about, you know, managing all the grief that we had to see. And she was saying that sometimes the media can be the only people who are in a terrible situation get to talk to, get to release their grief, get to pay tribute to their loved ones. So I always try to keep that in perspective. And also the bigger picture, sadly, a few weeks ago, my colleague and I had to go out to where a child had gone from their house and drowned in a dam. It was just horrendous. And I felt really uncomfortable doing it. And it was in a small town. And so I kept trying to say to her, I'm like, look, this is terrible, but big picture here, this story could stop one other parent from their child wandering off and getting into the same situation. So trying to look at the big picture of it all.
Now, in that situation there, how would you keep yourself under control, your emotions, to report that? I couldn't imagine a more difficult situation to report on than that.
Yeah, it is quite horrible. Fortunately, that one I didn't have to do a big report on, but then like within, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks, we were back in another scene in Bendigo where sadly a child had crawled out of his home and was hit by a car on the road. So, yeah, it's quite horrible trying to keep your emotions under control, but you're just on adrenaline, and it's go, get the facts, get the story out there, that you don't even have that much time to digest it all. But there is a little point in the day where I remember I was writing and there was people around me in the office making heaps of noise, and I felt like saying to them, can you just be quiet? I'm just was really trying to write the story in the most sensitive way, and also was feeling a lot going on. And so, yeah, I just had to breathe through that one.
Oh, that's terrible. And, like, how do you approach the parents of, say, a situation like that where they've had the unexpected death of a child? How do you approach the parents, or do you approach the parents, or do you wait for them to approach you? How does that come about?
From my experience, this might be different for other journalists, but fortunately there seems to be a lot of people in terrible situations have these angelic friends that just pop out of nowhere, and they're normally sort of the gatekeeper. I'm sure you've probably come across a lot of them in your career, these wonderful friends. So that's often helpful. And asking them if they want to pay tribute, because as I was saying before, like sometimes we're the only outlet for them to remember to be able to express to thousands of people how special their loved one was.
Do you get abused wanting to talk to, I don't know, say a neighbour or another person that lives near where the child or, you know, some terrible incident has happened? Have you been abused?
Personally, I haven't that badly that it stands out in my memory. I know that we've been called vultures and terrible human beings and to go away, and sometimes it's just the old saying, just I'm really sorry, I'm just doing my job, just tell us yay or nay and then we'll get out of your hair. But fortunately I haven't taken on too much of anyone's abuse that it's really sunk in.
I think you're very lucky. Are there times when you interview somebody who you don't want to interview for whatever reason, and what would one of those reasons be?
Ooh, this is a really tricky question. No, so I like interviewing anyone. Most of the time, if it's a situation where it's not a crime story, it might be a story about a terminal illness of a child or a medical issue, someone raising awareness, it can be super horrible trying to ask those really blunt questions, because you know on one side people like talking, they do like talking about it and they're happy to talk about it, but the other way they might interpret your questions as rude and or insensitive, even though the art of creating a story to help the audience connect with the issue is to ask those hard questions.
Yeah, I don't envy you. You know Tammy Mills?
Yeah, I've met her before.
Yeah, amazing woman. Tammy was a regional reporter who was digging around looking for a story. You know how you talked about on those quiet days when there's not much going on and you're digging around? And Tammy discovered or uncovered a story that was an unsolved murder of a young 16-year-old girl. And she actually ended up solving it. Are you aware of that job?
I am. I read about that in Ron Idle's book. That was very impressive.
Oh, just incredible. And for those out there who don't know, Tammy was looking around for something a quiet day, and she comes across a missing person by the name of Michelle Buckingham. And Michelle had gone missing in Shepparton, and they'd found her body. I think I'm right here. They'd found her body, but they'd never been able to find out who had murdered her. And it's just amazing the passage of time and how our allegiances change, isn't it? Where and relationships change. You may be with your husband and then you found out he's had an affair or something, and then your allegiances change and you think, well, I'm going to tell the cops what I know. But Tammy actually did a story on it, and somebody came forward and told the story about, I think it was the person that had murdered Michelle. He'd had a terrible guilt complex and decided he had to tell somebody, and he actually told our dear friend Mr. Riddles. Have you found stories like that on quiet days? Well, not to that point, but is that something you sort of think, God, how good would that be?
I know. I think it would be amazing. I wish I could do something like that. I had two weird circumstances. Once there was this lady who was missing, and a few years back when I worked at Wynn, and I absolutely love missing people stories when they actually turn into stories. You know, they're not people that have just gone off to their mate's house and left their mobile phone. And so I was Googling this lady heaps, and I sort of was getting a bit of an instinct that something wasn't right here, and her name was Samantha Kelly. And then I went to where she was living with these three other people in Kangaroo Flat and knocked at the door and said, you know, where's your housemate? Do you miss her? And this guy's gone, oh, yeah, she's just gone off in the night, you know, down the road. And I said, was she nice? And he goes, oh, on and off. And then I was quite surprised. I was like, God, she's been missing a few days. And then they ended up being charged with her murder. So that was absolutely a bizarre one. And speaking of Roy
goodness. Evil, so you're talking to the murderer at the house.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Did that give you the creeps a bit?
Not really. I just thought, oh, that's a bit strange. I actually felt it's really weird. Sometimes you feel a bit sorry for them. You're like, oh, like, isn't that terrible? Like, you had one moment of madness, well, 1 minute of madness, and you've just ruined your whole life because of it. Like, 45 seconds and everything's down the drain and you're in jail. I just, yeah.
What were you going to say about Ron?
Oh, I did a really embarrassing one with him. The context, this was in 2015, so it was a few years ago. And I think it was New Year's Day, and we drove out into the bush where they'd found a burnt out car, and he kept saying, "We've found human remains in the car." And I kept saying, "What do you mean by human remains? Is the—" And he was answering me, and in the end I said, "Is the guy dead?" And he said, "Yes, the guy's dead. You get the question of the year," because I had this idea in my head that human remains might have meant that they chopped off his arm and just left it in the car, not the whole body. But I guess,
sorry,
like,
I shouldn't laugh.
It is funny though. I mean, that's though the beauty of news is that you're always trying to put things in basic terms for the average person, and that was a really bad example of it.
But also not even the reporter understands the language, so you have to, I was going to say dumb it down. That's a bit harsh. What is it that you – why do you think people are so interested in crime? What is the draw card?
The unknown. It's an unknown that we don't have to be responsible for, that we can just sit back and, you know, play it on the mind. What do you think?
I don't know. Hey, who's doing the interview here? Hang on a minute. No, but I actually think a lot of it is that so many of us have been in a situation similar, say, to when somebody, like, I don't know, say, the one I think about a lot is Jill Maher. Jill Maher has been out to a pub. She's had a great night with her friends. And how many of us have been in a situation like that where we've had a great night, we can't be bothered waiting for a taxi, and we think, look, it's not far, I'll walk home. And Jill Maher was actually abducted. She was murdered and her body was dumped, I don't know what it was, 30 Ks away or something. But I think it's the fact that we can put ourselves in so many similar situations, so we can sort of resonate with the circumstances. Look, I don't know, but that's one of the reasons why I think people are interested in crime. And do you find that a lot of, I would have to say, I don't know, 80% of the people that listen to the Australian True Crime podcast, they are women. And I often wonder that, what is it about crime? Why are women so interested? But I think we can put ourselves in a lot of victim shoes. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I guess that whole premise of, like, you know, if I'm walking from here to another place and I, you know, see a man walking down the street, I think, oh, could have walked to the other side of the road, or, you know, you think, oh, they could attack me. It's that whole, that whole mindset is that we're so more aware and we want to know how to fight off crime and how to get around it and what can we do to avoid it.
Yeah, it's it's fascinating. I mean, there's so many different reasons why, I'd be interested to know why men are interested in crime. I mean, you know, really, they're no different. I mean, well, they are different. They're men and we're women. But I don't understand the fascination with men interested in crime more so than women. Women I just get. But so, Sarah, have you ever been threatened at work or felt in fear of your safety?
Yeah, there was one time when I went up to Echuca and there had been 6 arrests because police had uncovered what they described as a crime ring. And it went from, there was a spate of burglaries over, I think, 6 months from Yarrawonga to Echuca, and it sounded like, if, as a journalist, it was an exciting story to cover. And we went up there, they did a press conference, and then we said, can we have the addresses of where the houses that you've raided are, because that helps to tell the story. And they gave us 6 addresses and we went around to them, just quickly got shots. And we're at this particular property in a not so nice part of Echuca, and the camera operator's filming and I'm just looking at the house, and then we see on the side of the house a window frame start to come off, and a guy jumping through the window. And I'm going to my cameraman, look at this, film this. And without thinking, just the journalist and me going, film it. Then the guy spotted us. He's peeped back through the window like a meerkat and gone, oi, what are you doing? And I know this because we watched it back several times. And then, you know, like funniest home videos, yeah. The camera, like you see it like pan to the ground, and I'm like to my camera operator, uh-oh, we're going to go, get in the car, quick, go. So we're racing, getting in the car, gone down the street. He's naturally gone to turn left, but it's a dead end. So we've done a U-turn, and this house was only maybe 2 or 3 houses up the street, and we've turned around, and the guy is standing there in front of the car, and he didn't look very good. Like, I think he was in his worst tracksuit. He could have haunted a house, and he was yelling at us saying, what are you doing with that camera? And, oh, my gosh, and it was so terrifying in the moment. And you think people that – for a living, we film things. Of course, did I get my phone to film? No. Was I just sitting there going, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. Absolutely terrified. And the camera operator I was with, I think he was only 20 or 21-year-old boy, like absolutely fantastic cameraman, but he'd obviously never faced anything like this in his life. And we went forward a bit and he's like got his hands on the bonnet and we're like, ah. And then he went to the ground, to the side, to pick up a rock. And I'm talking a Sharon football-sized rock. And I just said to my camera, go, go, go. And, oh, it was terrifying. Like, to think if that rock had gone through the window, it was really I don't think my hands have ever been so sweaty. And then we just drove for a bit and we had to stop and gain our composure because we were quite shaken up. And then we did call the Echuca police and tell them that we did also see this. So maybe take a drive down there as well. And, yeah, so that was quite a scary moment.
Just while you're on that, Sarah, so when the guy was coming out of the window frame came off, I'm just thinking, why didn't he go through the door? Like, was he not supposed to be in that house, or why was he coming out of the window?
Oh, good question. I don't know. I think it looked like he was breaking in, or it looked like it maybe was his friend's house, because the house was originally used to harbour stolen items from what we were told. So maybe he was just going back to collect something.
Yes, because I'm thinking,
he's very busy.
Why wouldn't he walk out the door like 99.9% of us? You know, oh, well, they're funny in Echuca, you know, if that's what you do.
Stretching his legs maybe.
Oh, dear. So tell us about, you said you had 2. What's the other one?
The other one was about 5 years ago. I was covering a puppy farm and 2 old people in their 70s and their son, they had 200 combined charges for running a puppy farm. And in the end, they were fined a really really huge amount of money. And this was fortunately before video links were in vogue, like they are now in COVID. Mm. And they had to do quite a long walk out of the court. So we're chasing them. And, you know, we've all seen on the news.
Yep.
I think, though, when journalists are chasing people outside court, they should test the speed that they're going at, because I think a few world records are broken there, because it can be quite fast running in heels. And this lady had a walking stick and I'm chasing her, you know, are you sorry for what you've done? You know, do you feel sad for the animals? And she's gone to hit me with her walking stick. And I just thought, oh, my God, I've never been assaulted at work and I don't want to start with a 70-year-old woman. So I, like a puppy, really, I sort of backed away and thought, oh. So her court walk was a little bit shorter. So that was the other time that I thought, oh, no, I'm in trouble here physically.
You know, I'm surprised that you've I don't mean this to sound the way it's going to, but I'm surprised that you've only been really threatened like that twice, because I'm thinking about all the times that journalists go to a house to interview somebody, and you know how people, I don't know, slam the door or get out of my house or whatever. Have you ever had that happen to you?
I reckon I have, but nothing stands out in my memory as being yelled at. There was another time outside court, we were covering this guy who was in a wheelchair who ended up being found guilty of pretending to be a charity, and he got in all this money claiming to be for a child and a family with a terminal illness. And funnily enough, I'd covered that child, the story, as a medical story. So I knew about this case, and this guy had really scammed this family, and he always had like a guy pushing him in and out of court, and he sort of went to run at one of the camera operators one day. But of course, yet again, people were masters at filming, but in that situation, my camera operator didn't press record. I think it's a lesson that we keep learning over and over again.
It's funny you say that, like your tools of trade, and when something traumatic, but when something happens that you're not expecting, you haven't got the cameras rolling. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Imagine what you could have when the cameras were rolling, if they were.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I had another time once where a horse bucked up because it got spooked by the camera, but that time the camera operator was recording, and that clip was of great, you know, laughter for years on end with me running in heels because I have a bit of a fear of horses, but also a great big horse, you know, jumping up and being, oh no, where is this going? And then like the girl fell off, and the story was about her recovering from a horse ride, and I'm thinking, oh no, this is really going downhill, but it all turned out in the end.
Anyway, look, Sarah, I think that's fascinating. You've given us a great insight into reporting of crime, and it's not an easy job. So, and thank you for what you do, because you expose us to situations that without you we wouldn't know about. So thank you for what you do. Keep up the great work, and you keep digging for those interesting stories, all right?
I will. I'm so motivated now. Thank you.
Thanks for your time, Sarah.
Thanks, Narelle.
Hey, it's Narelle here again. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the podcasts as much as we enjoy putting them together. But to make sure you never miss an episode of Narelle Fraser Interviews, hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a rating and even a review. And please share it with all your friends too. And again, thanks for joining us. We have got some amazing stories to tell. So thanks again. See ya.